Again, two more followed, and then a fourth. They were very small to look at, yet he knew, somehow, that they were huge, with a vast stretch of pinion, flying at a great height. He covered his eyes and bent forward, cowering. The same warning fear was on him as he had felt in the presence of the black riders, the helpless horror that had come with the cry in the wind and the shadow on the moon, though now it was not so crushing or compelling. The menace was more remote, but menace it was. Frodo felt it too. His thought was broken. He stirred and shivered, but he didn't look up. Gollum huddled himself together like a cornered spider. The winged shapes wheeled and stooped swiftly down, speeding back to Mordor. Sam took a deep breath. "The riders are about again, up in the air," he said in a hoarse whisper. "I saw them. Do you think they could see us? They were very high up. And if they're black riders, same as before, then they can't see much by daylight, can they?" "No, perhaps not," said Frodo. "But their steeds could see. And these winged creatures that they ride on now, they can probably see more than any other creature. They are like great carrion birds. They are looking for something. The enemy is on the watch, I fear." The feeling of dread passed, but the enfolding silence was broken. For some time they had been cut off from the world, as if in an invisible island. Now they were laid bare again. Peril had returned. But still Frodo did not speak to Gollum or make his choice. His eyes were closed, as if he were dreaming or looking inward into his heart and memory. At last he stirred and stood up, and it seemed that he was about to speak and to decide. But, hark, he said, "What's that?" A new fear was upon them. They heard singing and hoarse shouting. At first it seemed a long way off, but it drew nearer. It was coming towards them. It leapt into all their minds that the black wings had spied them and had sent armed soldiers to seize them. No speed seemed too great for these terrible servants of Sauron. They crouched, listening. The voices and the clink of weapons and harness were very close. Frodo and Sam loosened their small swords in their sheaths. Flight was impossible. Gollum rose slowly and crawled insect-like to the lip of the hollow. Very cautiously he raised himself inch by inch, until he could peer over it between two broken points of stone. He remained there without moving for some time, making no sound. Presently the voices began to recede again, and then they slowly faded away. Far off a horn blew on the ramparts of the Morannon. Then quietly Gollum drew back and slipped down into the hollow.
"More men going to Mordor," he said in a low voice. "Dark faces. We've not seen men like these before. No, Smeagol hasn't. They're fierce. They have black eyes and long black hair and gold rings in their ears. Yes, lots of beautiful gold. And some have red paint on their cheeks and red cloaks, and their flags are red, and the tips of their spears. And they have round shields, yellow and black, with big spikes. Not nice. Very cruel, wicked men they look. Almost as bad as orcs, and much bigger. Smeagol thinks they have come out of the south beyond the great river's end. They came up that road. They have passed on to the Black Gate. But more may follow. Always more people coming to Mordor. One day all the peoples will be inside."
"Were there any Oliphants?" asked Sam, forgetting his fear and his eagerness for news of strange places.
"No, no Oliphants. What are Oliphants?" said Gollum.
Sam stood up, putting his hands behind his back, as he always did when speaking poetry, and began. "Grey as a mouse, big as a house, nose like a snake, I make the earth shake. As I tramp through the grass, trees crack as I pass. With horns in my mouth, I walk in the south, flapping big ears. Beyond count of years, I stump round and round, never lie on the ground, not even to die. Oliphant am I,
biggest of all, huge, old and tall. If ever you'd met me, you wouldn't forget me. If you never do, you won't think I'm true. But old Oliphant am I, and I never lie."
"That," said Sam, when he'd finished reciting, "that's a rhyme we have in the Shire. Nonsense, maybe, and maybe not. But we have our tales too, and news of the South, you know. In the old days, hobbits used to go on their travels now and again. Not that many ever came back, and not that all they said was believed. News from Bree, and not sure as Shire talk, as the sayings go. But I've heard tales of the big folk down away in the Sunlands. Swertings we call them in our tales, and they ride on Oliphants, 'tis said, when they fight. They put houses and towers on the Oliphants' backs and all, and the Oliphants throw rocks and trees at one another. So when you say, 'Men out of the South, all in red and gold,' I said, 'Were there any Oliphants? For if there was, I was going to take a look. Risk or no, but now I don't suppose I'll ever see an Oliphant. Maybe there ain't no such beast,'" he sighed.
"No, no Oliphants," said Gollum again. "Smeagol hasn't heard of them. He doesn't want to see them. He doesn't want them to be. Smeagol wants to go away from here and hide somewhere safer. Smeagol wants Master to go. Nice Master. Won't he come with Smeagol?"
Frodo stood up. He'd laughed in the midst of all his cares when Sam trotted out the old fireside rhyme of Oliphant, and the laugh had released him from hesitation. "I wish we had 1,000 Oliphants with Gandalf on a white one at their head," he said. "Then we'd break away into this evil land, perhaps. But we've not. Just our own tired legs, that's all. Well, Smeagol, the third turn may turn the best. I will come with you."
"Good Master, wise Master, nice Master," said Gollum in delight, patting Frodo's knees. "Good Master! Then rest thou, nice hobbits, under the shadow of the stones, close under the stones. Rest and lie quiet till the yellow face goes away. Then we can go quickly. Soft and quick as shadows we must be."
Chapter 4 Of Herbs and Stewed Rabbit. For the few hours of daylight that were left, they rested, shifting into the shade as the sun moved, until at last the shadow of the western rim of their dell grew long, and darkness filled all the hollow. Then they ate a little, and drank sparingly. Gollum ate nothing, but he accepted water gladly.
"Soon get more now," he said, licking his lips. "Good water runs down in streams to the great river. Nice water in the lands we're going to. Smeagol will get food there too, perhaps. He's very hungry, yes, Gollum."
He set his two large flat hands on his shrunken belly, and a pale green light came into his eyes. The dusk was deep when at length they set out, creeping over the westward rim of the dell, and fading like ghosts into the broken country on the borders of the road. The moon was now 3 nights from the full, but it didn't climb over the mountains until nearly midnight, and the early night was very dark. A single red light burned high up in the towers of the Teith, but otherwise no sign could be seen or heard of the sleepless watch on the Morannon. For many miles the red eye seemed to stare at them as they fled, stumbling through a barren, stony country. They didn't dare to take the road, but they kept it on their left, following its line as well as they could at a little distance. At last, when night was growing old, and they were already weary, for they had taken only one short rest, the eye dwindled to a small fiery point and then vanished. They'd turned the dark northern shoulder of the lower mountains and were heading southwards. With hearts strangely lightened, they now rested again, but not for long. They were not going quick enough for Gollum,
By his reckoning, it was nearly 30 leagues from the Morannon to the crossroads above Osgiliath, and he hoped to cover that distance in 4 journeys. So soon they struggled on once more until the dawn began to spread slowly in the wide grey solitude. They then walked almost 8 leagues, and the hobbits could not have gone any further, even if they'd dared. The growing light revealed to them a land already less barren and ruinous. The mountains still loomed up ominously on their left, but near at hand they could see the southward road, now bearing away from the black roots of the hills and slanting westwards. Beyond it were slopes covered with sombre trees like dark clouds, but all about them lay a tumbled heathland, grown with ling and broom and cornel, and other shrubs that they didn't know. Here and there they saw knots of tall pine trees. The hearts of the hobbits rose again a little in spite of weariness. The air was fresh and fragrant, and it reminded them of the uplands of the Northfarthing far away. It seemed good to be reprieved, to walk in a land that had only been for a few years under the dominion of the Dark Lord and wasn't yet fallen wholly into decay. But they didn't forget their danger, nor the black gate that was still all too near, hidden though it was behind the gloomy heights. They looked about for a hiding place where they could shelter from evil eyes while the light lasted. The day passed uneasily. They lay deep in the heather and counted out the slow hours in which there seemed little change, for they were still under the shadows of the Ephelduath, and the sun was veiled. Frodo slept at times, deeply and peacefully, either trusting Gollum or too tired to trouble about him. But Sam found it difficult to do more than doze, even when Gollum was plainly fast asleep, whiffling and twitching in his secret dreams. Hunger, perhaps, more than mistrust, kept him wakeful. He had begun to long for a good homely meal, something hot out of the pot. As soon as the land faded into a formless grey under coming night, they started out again. In a little while, Gollum led them down onto the southward road, and after that they went on more quickly, though the danger was greater. Their ears were strained for the sound of hoof or foot on the road ahead, or following them from behind, but the night passed, and they heard no sound of walker or rider. The road had been made in a long-lost time, and for perhaps 30 miles below the Morannon it had been newly repaired. But as it went south, the wild encroached upon it. The handiwork of men of old could still be seen in its straight, sure flight and level course. Now and again it cut its way through hillside slopes, or leapt over a stream upon a wide, shapely arch of enduring masonry. But at last all signs of stonework faded, save for a broken pillar here and there, peering out of bushes at the side, or old paving stones still lurking amid weeds and moss. Heather and trees and bracken scrambled down and overhung the banks, or sprawled out over the surface. It dwindled at last to a country cart road little used. But it didn't wind. It held on its own sure course and guided them by the swiftest way. So they passed into the northern marches of that land that men once called Ithilien, a fair country of climbing woods and swift-falling streams. The night became fine under star and round moon, and it seemed to the hobbits that the fragrance of the air grew as they went forward, and from the blowing and muttering of Gollum it seemed that he noticed it too, and didn't relish it. At the first signs of day, they halted again. They'd come to the end of a long cutting, deep and sheer-sided in the middle, by which the road clove its way through a stony ridge. Now they climbed up the westward bank and looked abroad. Day was opening in the sky, and they saw that the mountains were now much further off, receding eastward in a long curve that was lost in the distance. Before them, as they turned west, gentle slopes ran down into dim hazes far below. All about them were small woods of resinous trees, fir and cedar and cypress, and other kinds unknown in the Shire, with wide glades among them, and everywhere there was a wealth of sweet-smelling herbs and shrubs. The long journey from Rivendell had brought them far south of their own land, but not until now, in this more sheltered region, had the hobbits felt the change of clime. Here spring was already busy about them. Fronds pierced moss and mould, larches were green-fingered, small flowers were opening in the turf, birds were singing. Ithilien, the garden of Gondor, now desolate, kept still a dishevelled, dryad loveliness. South and west it looked towards the warm lower vales of Anduin, shielded from the east by the Ethelduath, and yet not under the mountain shadow, protected from the north by the Emynweald, open to the southern airs and the moist winds from the sea far away. Many great trees grew there, planted long ago, falling into untended age amid a riot of careless descendants, and groves and thickets there were of tamarisk and pungent terebinth, of olive and of bay, and there were junipers and myrtles and thymes that grew in bushes, or with their woody creeping stems mantled in deep tapestries the hidden stones, sages of many kinds putting forth blue flowers, or red, or pale green, and marjorams and new sprouting parsleys, and many herbs of forms and scents beyond the garden lore of Sam. The grots and rocky walls were already starred with saxifrages and stone crops. Primeroles and anemones were awake in the filbert brakes, and asphodel and many lily flowers nodded their half-opened heads in the grass. Deep green grass beside the pools, where falling streams halted in cool hollows on their journey down to Anduin. The travellers turned their backs on the road and went downhill. As they walked, brushing their way through bush and herb, sweet odours rose about them. Gollum coughed and retched, but the hobbits breathed deep, and suddenly Sam laughed, for heart's ease, not for jest. They followed a stream that went quickly down before them. Presently it brought them to a small, clear lake in a shallow dell. It lay in the broken ruins of an ancient stone basin, the carven rim of which was almost wholly covered with mosses and rose brambles. Iris swords stood in ranks about it, and water lily leaves floated on its dark, gently rippling surface. But it was deep and fresh, and spilled ever softly out over a stony lip at the far end. Here they washed themselves, and drank their fill at the infalling freshet. Then they sought for a resting place and a hiding place, for this land, fair-seeming still, was none the less now territory of the enemy. They'd not come very far from the road, and yet even in so short a space they'd seen scars of the old wars, and the newer wounds made by the orcs and other foul servants of the Dark Lord. A pit of uncovered filth and refuse, trees hewn down wantonly and left to die, with evil runes or the fell sign of the eye cut in rude strokes on their bark. Sam, scrambling below the outfall of the lake, smelling and touching the unfamiliar plants and trees, forgetful for the moment of Mordor, was reminded suddenly of their ever-present peril. He stumbled on a ring still scorched by fire, and in the midst of it he found a pile of charred and broken bones and skulls. The swift growth of the wild with briar and eglantine and trailing clematis was already drawing a veil over this place of dreadful feast and slaughter. But it wasn't ancient. He hurried back to his companions, but he said nothing. The bones were best left in peace and not pawed and routed by Gollum. "Let's find a place to lie up in," he said. "Not lower down, higher up for me." A little way back above the lake they found a deep brown bed of last year's fern. Beyond it was a thicket of dark-leaved bay trees climbing up a steep bank that was crowned with old cedars. Here they decided to rest and pass the day, which already promised to be bright and warm. A good day for strolling on their way along the groves and glades of Ithilien. But though orcs may shun the sunlight, There were too many places here where they could lie hid and watch, and other evil eyes were abroad. Sauron had many servants.